Welcome to the Senate Policing Vote Conference Call. My name is Karen. I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Shen Inouye. Shen, you may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining this call. My name is Shen Inouye, Director of Communications and Rapid Response at the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. We are pleased to host this telephonic press briefing call on why senators must oppose the Republican police reform legislation, the Justice Act. The Senate is expected to take a procedural vote to advance the legislation on Wednesday. Joining us on the call today are Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, Alfonso David, President of the Human Rights Campaign, Hillary Shelton, Director of the NAACP Washington Bureau, and Edward Chung, Vice President, Criminal Justice at Center for American Progress. Speakers will be available to answer your questions during the Q&A session, and the operator will advise reporters on how you can get in the queue at that time. So first, let me turn it over to Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights.
Great. Thank you, Shen. Thank you all for joining us. Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. It's a coalition of more than 220 national organizations working to build an America as good as its ideals. Thanks to my colleagues for joining us on this urgent call to push comprehensive congressional action to protect Black communities from the systemic perils of police misconduct and brutality. There's no question that Black communities deserve and need real justice now. Structural change to end white supremacy, freedom from unjust and targeted policing, and the space and resources to grieve and heal. In the aftermath of the recent police killings, the Leadership Conference sent Congress a letter signed by more than 450 organizations outlining 8 principles to transform policing and lead to accountability in this nation. But instead of taking meaningful action, the Senate chose to put forth a bill that falls woefully short of the comprehensive changes needed to address the current policing crisis. It is deeply problematic and indeed unacceptable to meet this moment with a menial incremental approach that offers more funding to law enforcement and few policies to end state-sanctioned violence against Black and Brown communities. This is why we and over 135 other organizations are calling on senators to reject this bill and the motion to proceed. And it's why the Leadership Conference will score tomorrow's vote. In the absence of real leadership at the White House and the Justice Department, members of Congress need to do more than offer up half measures and more studies. This is not the time for any of that. Black communities deserve real and meaningful change, and nothing less is going to do. It is time now to reimagine public safety in a way that prioritizes upfront investments in community-led solutions and resources that center the dignity and respect for everyone. That means not just changing policing practices and culture, but also shrinking the footprint of the criminal legal system in Black and Brown communities' lives and investing in areas that truly make us safer. We cannot let anyone, not even members of Congress, distort the work that we have to do now to honor Rayshard Brooks, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, and the lives of so many more who have been killed by police. The outpourings of grief and generational pain across the country are a response not only to the unjust policing of Black people, they are a cry for public officials to take bold action and demand a new paradigm for public safety. We can't go through this cycle over and over again. And so now really is the time for those in our nation's highest offices, members of Congress, who have not taken up meaningful police reform since the mid-90s, to take the first step to end state-sanctioned violence and pass transformative police accountability legislation. This is not a check-the-box moment. I want to thank everyone and now pass it to the next speaker. Thanks.
Thank you, Vinita. Next, we'll hear from Alfonso David, President of the Human Rights Campaign.
Chen, thank you so much for that. Thank you, Vinita. Hello, everyone. My name is Alfonso David. I am the President of the Human Rights Campaign, which is the nation's largest LGBTQ civil rights organization. At the Human Rights Campaign, we have been fighting for equality for 40 years, and the principle of equality means something only if it extends to all of us. Right now, Black communities in this country face disproportionate levels of policing, which of course leads to more interactions with law enforcement, more arrests, and often less trust. And the disproportionate level of policing is informed in part by the funding. The large amount of funding that pours into policing in this country could be better spent on social services, including more community-based social workers and investment in programs that address the problems that communities face. Many of the names that we all know were victims of this type of over-policing. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade. Tony, as an example, was a Black transgender man who lived in Tallahassee, Florida. According to people in his community, he had a history of mental illness and would have benefited greatly from increased funding to social service programs. What Tony did not benefit from was living in a community that forced him to come into contact with police on a near daily basis. He was killed by the same police officers that were supposed to be protecting him and his community. Black Americans, and especially Black transgender Americans, should not be forced to live in fear of their lives. But unfortunately, they do. They should not have to worry that a police officer will kill them. But unfortunately, they do. And the United States Senate should not pursue legislation that simply leads to more over-policing. This is the wrong solution, and it misunderstands the problem that we're facing as a country. The Human Rights Campaign signed on to the congressional letter outlining principles to transform policing that the leadership conference submitted to Congress more than several weeks ago. And just last week, the Human Rights Campaign and more than 350 LGBTQ organizations released an open letter calling for structural change, for divestment of police resources and investment in communities, and for long-term transformational change in policing. We have to transform the system, not provide a system with more money and more power. Real transformative change to policing is vital to LGBTQ people all over this country. Real transformational change in policing is vital to Black people. And real transformational changes to policing is vital to the future of our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Alfonso. Now we'll hear from Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP Washington Bureau.
Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to join my friends, colleagues, and coalition partner members as we address a crucial issue important to the NAACP from our very beginning. In 1909, the NAACP was founded and has grown to an organization with over 500,000 card-carrying members, 2,200 membership units throughout the United States, and we are indeed in every state in the United States as well as other places as well. Since our founding in 1909, human and effective, unbiased, non-brutal, non-fatal policing has been a key element to the NAACP's policy agenda. We've worked to make sure and address issues in our policy platform that speak to the concerns of police brutality, an issue that has come up in our communities throughout the country since our very beginning. Some of our seminal reports, including the Beyond the Rodney King story and other supplemental reports, look at policing and community relations and realize that indeed, America, we have a problem. We have a problem when African Americans sense in their communities that indeed they will be attacked by the same people that are supposed to be those here to serve and protect. And as such, much, much more needs to be done. We appreciate very much that Tim Scott and some of the others in the U.S. Senate have raised the issue and brought it to the forefront for the first time. It's sad to see that it's taken this long to get it, but I certainly give our senator credit for having the courage to raise it in an atmosphere that does not seem to want to respond to the issues. What I'm talking about is S-3985, the Just and Unifying Solutions to Invigorating Communities Everywhere Act of 2020, or the Justice Act, as it's called. But we know this, we look at the Justice Act as it begins to talk about some of the important issues, the solutions are inadequate. As we think about the resources that are very well needed to make sure there are real policies in place that hold our police officers accountable to serve and protect, we still end up too often finding ourselves watching television as yet another unarmed African-American man or woman or others throughout our country have been killed, and we're wondering how it is this unarmed person could be summarily executed even on our TV screens. And those in our police department seem to respond by saying they acted by the book. And that's why we need policy that will speak to changing the book in a way that America can live up to its promises of protection for everyone. And that's why, as much as we have to oppose the Senator's bill, we do support H.R. 7120, a House bill that's coming through on Thursday in the House of Representatives and one that is pending now in the U.S. Senate. It's our hope that we're taking this opportunity and this time to see how just awful and excruciating this problem is. You've heard names mentioned earlier in this press conference of those that were summarily executed on our streets. We've even watched those that were strangled on street corners in New York and those that were choked to death in Nebraska. And in essence, we know with those, it does not vary between gender because men and women, people of color, are being killed summarily along these lines, are very well hurt severely. That has to change. We want to make sure that we don't put in place something that's nothing more than a placebo. It's good to raise the issue and talk about it, but otherwise it's simply academic. It's time for us to make sure we pass legislation that makes sense. H.R. 7120 does, and the bill pending before the Senate that my friend Senator Scott is moving forward, unfortunately, does not. I thank you very much and look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Hillary. Finally, we'll hear from Edward K. Chung, Vice President, Criminal Justice at the Center for American Progress.
Thanks, Shin. And I want to echo the comments of my colleagues, Vanita, Hillary, and Alfonso, especially around the need to massively increase spending on community-based solutions and redefine how we achieve public safety. As many of you know, the Center for American Progress is a multi-issue think tank based in Washington, D.C., and I lead the Criminal Justice Reform Program there. I want to start by echoing or quoting Republican Senator Mike Braun from Indiana, as reported in the Washington Post this morning, when he said that this is a watershed moment. It truly is a watershed moment in policing and in policing reform. And we've seen that with the millions of people who've been protesting police brutality and police violence over the past several weeks. Senator Braun also was quoted in the Washington Post saying that the Justice Act that is sponsored by Senator Tim Scott is low-hanging fruit. And I couldn't agree more. The Justice Act is exactly that, low-hanging fruit. It's business as usual. And the Senate needs to consider a bill that makes meaningful accountability measures real in America, not just for officers who violate the law or violate policies, but for police departments who need to have systemic changes and systemic reforms. We cannot continue to rely on incentives and hope that law enforcement will change, especially considering that the federal government already provides resources to states for training and to make policy changes. We can't settle and believe that the millions of people protesting police brutality around the country are calling for new commissions and new studies. We've tried those things before, and this is not to say that trainings and policies aren't important. They are, but they're nowhere near enough. What we haven't tried is meaningful accountability for police officers and departments. And that includes making it unlawful for officers to recklessly use excessive force and removing qualified immunity as an immunity or a defense and extending the ability of the Department of Justice as well as state attorneys general to investigate police departments for patterns and practices of unconstitutional policing. This is truly a watershed moment for policing and policing reform in America. We cannot settle for low-hanging fruit, which is what the Justice Act is. Any policing reform bill considered by Congress must be centered around accountability. Happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Ed. Operator, we're now ready to take some questions from reporters. I would note for reporters, please let us know if your question is directed to a specific speaker. With that, Karen, can you please provide instructions to those who want to ask questions?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And we do have our first question from Zach Cohen from the National Journal.
Thanks for doing this call. I appreciate it. Can you like to see once this motion to proceed vote fails tomorrow as expected, what should be the next step in negotiations over a police reform bill in the Senate?
This is Vanita. I can start there. The next step for the Senate should be to engage with the House on the House bill, the Justice and Policing Act, that has the support and leadership of Senators Harris and Booker, that and to actually use that as the starting point for negotiations to come to a bill that actually provides the kind of accountability that the country needs and that Black communities need at this point. It's an important bill, and it's got it reflects the leadership conference's accountability provisions. It's got massive support and buy-in, including having testified in the House and the Senate on those provisions. I can say has actually more bipartisan support for many of the provisions that are contained in them.
And this is Hillary Shelton. The only thing I would add is also that it would be great if even now, before the Senate vote, Senator Scott would sit down with Senator Harris and Senator Booker as soon as possible to talk about where the similarities are in the bill and why it is that so many of the provisions in his bill leave it to really the discretion of the local police department, speaking again to the challenges and concerns we have about police, policing, police. We believe the community should be providing that oversight, and that very well we can work things together if the three African-American members of the U.S. Senate, all of which have either worked in law enforcement, in local governance, as well as in the governance of the whole United States of America, to sit down and see why it is that the bill that Senator Harris and Senator Booker are working on supporting in the Senate, the same as the House version, has the best solutions to be able to solve this problem and prevent the awful carnage that we've seen all too often of unarmed Americans throughout our streets.
And I'll just, this is Alfonso, David, I'll just put a one last postscript on this. I want to make sure we're not mincing words. The Senate's proposal is a non-starter. The Senate's proposal simply restates the existing system and funds the existing system, which is untenable. We do not support the Senate bill. And to Vinia's point, what they should do is engage with the House leadership on a proposal that we have been working with them on for several weeks now that does provide a runway for meaningful change moving forward.
Great. Operator, next question, please.
As a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And we do have our next question from Natalie Andrews from the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, thank you so much for doing this. I was wanting to ask you, do you see the House bill as the best case scenario? Do you see the House bill as a negotiating point and you'd want to see more done in that area? I guess in terms of negotiating, should the Senate and House start working together, what kind of outcome would you want to see? And is the House bill kind of the bare minimum, or is it tell me where it stands and what you think needs to happen to change policing in the country.
Yeah, this is Ed Chung from the Center for American Progress. So let me just quickly start by saying that the House bill or the Justice and Policing Act is a significant improvement, especially in the areas of accountability that we've talked about before. It has measures that provide accountability both at the federal level, at the state level, conditions funding on changes in policies, and goes a long way to enforce those things as well. But on top of that, this is nowhere, one bill cannot change policing in America. It takes much more than that. not only at the state and local level, but at the federal level. And so some of the things that my colleagues here have mentioned is not addressed even in the Justice and Policing Act, such as funding streams and so forth. Those things need to be a continuing agenda for Congress going forward. But at this moment, when we're talking about, at the very least, having a bill that has meaningful accountability for police departments and for police officers, the Justice and Policing Act is a significant improvement above the Justice Act, and it's not really even a close comparison.
And this is Hillary Shelton. This is Hillary Shelton from the NAACP, and I would certainly agree with everything that was just said and add just a few points. The bill in the House is a great start. It begins to lay down a new foundation for police policy and police accountability. Those issues are crucial. One of the reasons we have problems, quite frankly, with the Senate bill is it all seems to be so voluntary. That is, if they're moved to do it, they can do it, and we'll give them some money to pay for it. But we'll also offer that it does not provide real solutions. If we're thinking about the House bill, you're talking about a bill that speaks to issues that have been researched for decades, and that's the issue of racial profiling, the use of misuse of force by our police officers, and how we can set that growth, that problem along those lines, and be able to address those concerns as well. In essence, what we need is legislation that first sets a new policy foundation, training foundation, and a very comprehensive accountability foundation for our nation and for our police officers. When we speak to people in the African-American community, and quite frankly, we have units that are in 2,200 African-American communities throughout the United States. I can tell you that every hearing we've held from one side of the country to the other, this is not an anomaly. It is a pattern in practice that's actually led to the death and destruction of so many African-American communities, families, homes, and otherwise. So in essence, what we need is a foundation that this bill provides as we move to address some other issues, as we speak to a concern that is so comprehensive and broad as policing in the United States of America.
Yeah, and I would just to close this out, as both Ed and Hillary said, the House bill provides a really important accountability framework. It is a good and important first step. The leadership conference continues to work with the House to, you know, ensure the robustness of provisions. But there's no question that the House bill should be the document that is guiding Congress in this moment when we cannot settle for minor changes, particularly given how rare it has been for Congress to actually take up meaningful police reform. And in this moment, when George Floyd's death is impacting change and kind of racial awakening to racial injustice in this country far beyond policing, this is absolutely the moment where the kind of rigor that the House bill contains over the way the Senate bill is at this moment, it should be unquestionable that should be leading the charge for Congress at this moment.
And Vanita, this is Alfonso David. Just to make a finer point, because I think the details are important here, and for people to understand just the stark differences between the Senate bill and the bill that is being currently debated or considered in the House. The Senate bill does nothing on qualified immunity. It does nothing on racial profiling. It refuses to ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants. It fails to address militarization of police. The bill that the Senate is advancing is an offensive piece of legislation. Let's call it for what it is, that we have Black people in this country who have been killed by police, and we need to transform policing. What they are advancing is an offensive piece of legislation that does not address the problem.
Great. Thank you. Operator, any last questions?
As a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And we have no questions in queue.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining today's call. We will be releasing a recap and audio of this call later today. If you have any additional questions or to reach any of the speakers, please feel free to contact us at press@civilrights.org Once again, that's press@civilrights.org. Otherwise, thank you and have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.